It's a goddamn children's game played by a killer. We saw Hangman, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Can't you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I'm your host, Tall John Shear, and this is the podcast where we talk about movies that are so bad, they are actually great. Better than great. They are fantastic, and this is no exception. The 2017 film Hangman, starring Al Pacino, the ninth time he has played a cop. It's the lowest ranking cop movie of his on Rotten Tomatoes, with below 40%. The movie is simple. There is a serial killer out there who is killing people and also leaving clues to a game of Hangman. But who is it? Doesn't make a difference. It won't be something you can figure out. Here to break down the movie are my two co-hosts, Jason Manzoukas and June Diane Raphael. How are you both?
I'll be honest, Paul.
Yeah.
Getting it took you almost as long as it took me to get through this movie to get through the intro for this movie. I'm sure it will be edited perfectly, but this movie was as impenetrable as it was to summarize for you.
I mean, this is an odd movie because I haven't found myself laughing out loud as much in a movie that we've watched for this show than this film. But at the same time, when you get to the last 40 minutes, you're like, what? Like,
yeah.
I invested all of this for this? It's so wild. But I mean, I did enjoy the first hour. I'm loving it.
Oh, you're like going to McDonald's.
Yeah.
June, this are you is... okay?
Here's what I'll say. I want to start with the positive, actually, because there is a lot I really did, like, much like Paul. I mean, we were laughing. We were truly having some LOLs. And I've never heard of this. When did this movie come out? I don't know.
This is one of those movies that doesn't exist. This, I feel like, right, is the kind of movie that they make for foreign sales explicitly.
This is 100%. AI. This is, you know, this is, when you say it's impenetrable, it's exactly right. This movie is unknowable, and you can't, it doesn't ever happen. It's not a movie.
It doesn't
not
stick
a podcast
with you at all.
It doesn't stay. The actors are not there in it.
It's not a real movie. It's not a real movie. If you told me, like June said, like AI, it was assembled and cobbled together from the pieces of other movies, it would make sense why it doesn't add up. Because
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
So is there a lot that happens in this movie? Who knows? But we'll get into all of it. But one of the things that I was so confounded by was the way this movie was shot, because there are multiple moments where important action is happening. And I mean, like, someone's getting, you know, we're revealing the killer, or someone's stabbed, or someone got away. And I simply couldn't see. They didn't ever show.
So dark.
It's so dark. And I kept on rewinding.
Me too.
I did the exact. I kept rewinding to see, did they just reveal something I'm supposed to pick up on?
Because the reaction shots, they're cutting to reaction shots, but I can't see like, what we are all, everybody else has seen.
You can't see it. And even if you did, it wouldn't make sense because we didn't know that information beforehand. It's not like a twist.
Yes. If they had shown us anything, the movie is trying to create suspense, trying to create all these things that it is not itself bringing about. So by teasing you, the reality is, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we see who the killer is, it's not anybody we've ever met in the past, correct?
Nope, nor is it anyone that has been referenced.
But Paul, we did meet that person in the first scene.
No, we met somebody else. The person getting out of that truck was not him, was it?
Yes, it was.
Yes, that's the only connection, though. That's the only connection, though. And we don't know anything about him that helps. But I mean, like, we haven't seen, he's not one of the cops. He's not one of the...
By the way, I would have been okay with that. So that man who sideswipes Al Pacino in the beginning, that's him. And he did that's it on purpose. Killer. That's the killer. And that's we find that out because he was in jail for 9 months, for that sideswipe, which seems like a pretty heavy sentence.
Was the goal to just drive that day and sideswipe Al Pacino while he sits outside of a bar?
So that this whole plan can be set in motion? Because here's the other thing that occurred to me at the end of the movie. If you're going to set up a movie wherein the game of hangman is like the serial killer's calling card, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like, then we've got a hangman murderer. We've got like, the press would be on this. We've got like a whole thing. And the whole ethos of it would be trying to figure out what's the word.
Yes,
right?
They
never engage in trying to solve the puzzle. Not only that, but you would think that we have to solve the crime before he solves the before all the letters are revealed. And in fact, they don't. The guy wins. The serial killer wins because by the time all the letters are filled in, he's killed everybody.
Okay. And I'll have you both know, and then Paul, I want to hear what you're going to say. But for someone like me, a winner of Celebrity Wheel of Fortune.
Oh my gosh. Here we go. I'm also a winner of Celebrity Wheel of Fortune.
Did you win $160,000?
I didn't win that much.
I didn't think so. So as a winner of Celebrity Wheel of Fortune, $160,000 for a wonderful organization called Oceana. They protect and restore the world's oceans.
I won about $80,000. Okay.
So I guess I won double. So as a winner, once I realized, hangman, we get to figure out a word puzzle, I'm ready. I am ready. Give me a couple letters.
If I'm in the Monroe Police Force, I'm calling in Vanna White. I'm calling in June Diane Raphael.
I hope I get a call.
In hangman experts.
Yes.
Hangman experts. It's not even a long phrase. It's one word.
And also, there's no attempt. So they start figuring out these clues, but it's like at a certain point, like just throw some words on the table.
Wait, but June, we meet Al Pacino, or we meet him a year later, in a car doing crosswords
in Latin.
Which, by the way, makes no fucking sense.
Where do you get
So are the questions in Latin? He can't be filling in the answers. He can't be translating.
That was my whole thought. It's like clearly not, because he's getting like a consumer crossword. It looks like a book that you would buy at the airport. That's what he's doing. And he's like, oh, you're doing it in Latin. He's like, I'm always an altar boy. But it wouldn't work. But yet they go so far to get you to, not only is he good at crosswords, but he does them in Latin. And then this whole movie is a crossword in Latin.
A victim.
And he only figures it out here at the end.
Every letter is present but the last one.
I was the I. I was the I.
Here's
my problem with that.
They're bad cops.
He knew it. He already drew the line of the eviction.
But he didn't. This is my problem with the serial killer. Aside from obviously the fact that he's killing people, but he doesn't have. Al Pacino did not evict him as a child.
Yes, he did.
Wait, what?
That was the flashback.
What's the Latin word mean?
Eviction.
Eviction.
It's just eviction?
It's just eviction. But Al Pacino is just a cop. I thought he was just a cop who found he evicted him?
Yeah, listen to this clip.
I remember the last time I saw you. You were just up to here. Just a little boy. About 5 or 6 years old. I was a cop. I was doing my job. I got you. When that day was over, I washed my hands of you. I did. I know I did. And I know now that was a mistake. It was a tragic mistake. Jimmy, I remember those little eyes looking at me as if I was the one who killed your father. But I didn't. I didn't do it. He hung himself. I was there, Jimmy. I was there witnessing that trauma. You know what? Fuck you!
Paul, this clip didn't explain it, my friend.
Well, if you listen on, he was more upset
to this clip. He was upset that he didn't take care of him in like the home for wayward children, but that doesn't make him an eviction man.
Yeah, that's
he did evict him.
He's going to kill nine people so he can spell out eviction.
Well, who do you get more upset with, the repo man or the company like Allstate who's repossessing your car? The repo man. You don't get mad at Allstate.
But he wasn't evicting them.
He was the repo man.
What?
He just found the body though.
What Paul is saying, Jason, is that Al Pacino, young Al Pacino, shows up to evict them and happens to find the body, which is I do not think is the case.
Don't police put eviction notices on doors?
Landlords do.
Are you saying that Pacino is there in an official police duty to evict them?
Yes. That's what he's saying.
Oh, so that's why. Okay. If that is the case.
It is not.
It's not in the movie. I don't think. Now, that's a leap.
Law enforcement officers can evict a tenant after they have a court order.
Maybe that is what they're going for, but it's really not like so, explicitly laid out that way in the movie. Technically, we don't know any of this story of the boy and the majority of this movie happens
way before we check in.
The whodunit of this movie is so unsatisfying.
Oh, God.
Because when it is finally revealed, and we don't know who this person is, and when his motivations are revealed, we don't understand, nor have we been privy to those. So it's unsatisfying in every thriller, mystery, whodunit way.
Let me go back to the first question I wrote down when I watched this movie. And I want to ask this, and not... It's going to come across snarky, but I want you to both listen to it in a way that I meant it. Does Al Pacino need the money, or does he actually like this part? Because I want to get to the bottom of that. Like, Al Pacino doesn't seem to need the money, so he must have read this and felt, yeah, this is for me.
I disagree a little, only because, not that I disagree, but I think, because this, Al Pacino, I think, does two of these a year.
Okay.
Like, this is, like, John Malkovich is doing this. Bruce Willis, until his retirement, was doing this. There's a lot of actors who are in movies that are like police procedural, that are direct to foreign markets, mostly. They sell big, because these people are names, they sell big foreign, and so they can get paychecks for very little work. You know, this movie costs nothing.
I mean, he is on screen a lot. And I will say that he's not sleepwalking through it, right?
Oh, no, he's making choices.
A lot of choices. Sometimes he looks sleepy. My second question was, when did Al Pacino become Southern? I know we just accept it now, but this is...
First of all, where is Monroe?
Where is Monroe? It's like, yes.
Nolens? I have no idea.
It looks like a big city. And I wrote, where is he? And but then they're talking like, you retired from the FBI to go back to your hometown. Monroe, where? And yes, for sure, Pacino sounds like he's in the bayou.
Pacino sounds like he's in a Looney Tunes cartoon. He sounds like Foghorn Leghorn. We should put them together. Who now? Let me tell you, when I go over here, I tell you, FDA don't put that stuff in that man. I'm like, what is going on?
I couldn't make heads or tails of his accent at all. He's giving him his full Pacino hoo-ah, all that stuff, except it's definitely got a bayou lilt to it.
I think that Pacino was like, I like this script. Will you let me do it if I can wear my own scarves? And they were like, yeah, you can wear scarves. And he was like, great. Like, it did feel like he was dressed, like, he didn't go through wardrobe. He's like, I'll just wear what I'm wearing.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That's because he does. Like, Pacino now is an interesting character. I watched him like do a cooking segment with the guy who has donkey sauce. Well, it was a Guy Fieri. Like he's like, oh, I love you.
Oh,
guy.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's like, Pacino's getting out there. I guess what my question is, though, it's just a money gig, but it does look like he's not doing the money gigs the way other people are doing the money gigs. Like, he is on set, looks like night shoots because every place they enter is completely dark. There's never
dark
a light on
and
anywhere.
Empty. They don't have flashlights. They're police officers who enter pig factories, private homes in the middle of the night with no flashlights. Why? They are bad at their jobs. Every step of the way, they are behind. The person who breaks the most clues is Brittany Snow, who is an investigative reporter who is given unprecedented access to murder scenes and cases and everything for reasons that I don't know.
You're so right that she's given this unprecedented access, but I said to Paul, I was like, I understand when reporters go on a ride along, and I get, okay, the cops want a new, you know, they want this profile to kind of like soften their image or whatever, however she convinced Captain to
the mayor.
Let her in, the mayor to do this. But I'm like, that's, having ride along status is one thing. I have never heard of a reporter walking into an active crime scene.
Taking cell phone pictures, not putting on gloves, not putting on booties.
No. And I'm like, this is, they'll never be able to try a case. Had the serial killer survived, I believe he would have gotten off because like any sort of decent defense attorney, they're going to be like, why was this random civilian walking around these crime scenes?
Yeah, absolutely.
I also want to know about her reporting style because she seems to report or record a lot on her iPhone, but doing it at one question at a time. Like, she's in a ride along. You see her take out her phone, hit record and go, tell me, what about this? He answers, she hits stop and puts it away. One question at a time interview. Like, I find that to be a very...
And he's like, sure. She says, can I record you now?
Sure.
And like on camera. And he's like, yeah, sure. Okay. Like, what? No.
And he's behind his desk. By the way, that police station looked like a high class architectural office. It's like
loft. It was like a downtown loft. My favorite detail about that police station.
Oh, this
was...
is my favorite part.
There's one shot where behind Brittany Snow, as she's looking around the office, there are not one, but two pictures of a sunset. Same picture.
Yes.
And then, Paul, you saw this. I pointed out to you. Jason, did you see this?
No.
Then you sort of move from Brittany to him. Or I think you see those sunsets when she's looking around and happens to find the file about his wife.
Ugh.
But then when that scene where he's talking to Brittany Snow for the first time, behind him is the same picture of a sunset.
That postcard. I thought it was like postcards.
It's not.
But
a
you're
postcard.
Right. It's
a photograph.
Sunsets. And
it's a photograph.
You will see the sunsets in every picture. Maybe it's metaphoric. Like, this is the sunset of Al Pacino's career, not as an actor, but his cop career. I don't know. But also, boy, when you just talked about her getting that file, she pulls out that file, which is like right on top, like as if Carl Urban every day is like, all right, let me go back to looking
first
at pictures of
first.
My wife, my dead wife, my murdered dead wife. She looks at that for no more than 7.5 seconds and solves the case. She's like, oh,
yeah,
a hangman.
She is such a better police officer in terms of she's getting clues, figuring stuff out, putting connections together in a way that they are a failure, Carl Urban and Al Pacino. The number of times Al Pacino like hits himself and is like, oh, I should have known. Ah, I should have known. I should have known. Oh no, that's the one that put Chief in the hospital, the drunk driver that put Chief in the hospital.
He's like, he's celebrating. Oh, my favorite line was when he says, you know how many people I told their loved ones died gruesomely? Like a crazy line to say, like, don't worry about that. I got that under control. I'll tell anyone how their loved one was murdered. But it's like
so here's what I think. I think they were going for, and I wonder if this was an Al Pacino pass on the script, because what I think the story might have been was that he's such a kind of detached and inhumane cop, and so not attached to the work, so not attached to what you know, the sort of humanity,
like the humanity of
the
it,
police
yeah.
work and the situations he's in and the victims, that moment really should land at the end where he realizes, like, eviction, like, this guy, I didn't check in on him, I didn't care.
Just doing my job.
Right, but we know, because we've watched him, like, this woman, you know, Urban's wife is going to wanted him to walk her down the aisle. Like, we see him as a quite caring man, so it doesn't make a lick of sense.
This is the arc of the character, that he learned to care. But I would argue that he cares so much that he seems to be doing police work in the beginning, surveilling the bar, right?
Like, the donut shop. I couldn't figure out, am I supposed to be watching Pacino's movie, Carl Urban's movie? Like, who is the story of this movie? Is this a story about
the medical examiner?
The medical examiner should be fired. The medical examiner should be fired. Having watched so much Law and Order, she doesn't know anything. What time do you think the died? I don't know. I don't know. What?
How about this? Where they literally take a watch and they go, dust that for Prince.
Yeah.
No, that's not her job, nor would the watch have made it this far. Like, they would bring a cadaver in there. They wouldn't bring, like, wouldn't just be like, and look around here and see what you got. Like, she's always given her opinion. They died by hanging.
Deeply appreciated that actress, because she was giving us a lot. And there's two performances that I want to call out.
She was
absolutely
harried.
Spectacular.
Harried.
She was
harried.
Excited. She was nervous.
I've never seen someone's energy bubbling up on screen like that, where she was
She's doing an autopsy.
It was full on comedy.
I don't know. I mean, it's crazy.
The bones seem to be broken before, so she'd been in the hospital a couple times. Like, she was so struck by her own work, which I would imagine at a certain point you become a little detached from, but she was so thrown by every piece of information.
Which would almost make you think, like, oh, is this a small town? They've never seen anything
like
this.
But I don't think that's the case.
No, I agree. It's not the case. They're in a big town.
It's more like Gotham.
But she's acting as though, I've never seen anything like this. This is crazy. I'm, like, out of my element. What they're coming to her for, and she's hugging Pacino. Oh, my God, I missed you. You're supposed to be fishing, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, what do we got? And this should be old school rat-a-tat-tat. Let me drill it down for you. Here's the info. This should be an exposition dump. And basically every question they have for her, the expert, she's like, I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know.
It's going to take some time.
I'm like, as good as mine. Meanwhile, there's a random reporter standing in the room, too. I'm like, isn't this a sterile environment?
I also think, by the way, just to go back to that Al Pacino hugging her, like, clearly Pacino's been retired for a little bit. Because I think, you tell me, when he got his car sideswiped, he was kind of in the same spot doing the crosswords. So was he retired at that point? I think so, right?
Yeah.
Maybe about
a year? Oh, no, he wasn't.
Oh, no, he wasn't.
Oh, he was active. Okay.
Because he was on the radio. He was listening to the radio. Yeah.
Okay, so I love that, like, just to go to what June's saying, like, a cop who doesn't care, he hugs everyone in that precinct.
Again,
like, the captain loves him. Like, and I think that's Pacino as Al Pacino. Like, come here.
Everybody's got to love it. Everybody's got to love me.
Hey, you want a Dunkachino?
There's another performance in this picture that is remarkable. it is absolutely outstanding, and I really
I know you're gonna say
call out the actor who plays the priest.
Oh yeah.
Who has to describe, and I almost want to watch the scene again because it was so well done. First of all, the moment he's on screen, I was just taken with him. Like, I was like, everybody else is acting and this man is just existing.
Sure.
And I just thought he was so fucking good. But he has to tell a tale about how someone took his blood in the middle of the night in a vial.
Okay.
This is the former criminal turned priest that they're talking to.
You don't know her?
No.
Well, you're gonna have to do some explaining then, because your blood was in her apartment.
My blood in her apartment? I don't have it. You're not gonna believe this. Frankly, I still don't understand it myself. But a couple of months ago, I woke up in the middle of the night. Someone standing over me, a man. And I struggled, but he put something over my face. And eventually I passed out. When I woke up, there was blood coming out of my arm. I mean, it was dripping down my arm, like I'd gotten a shot or something. So,
okay, so you're telling us that a guy broke into your house and stole your blood? That's the story you're telling?
That's... I told you you wouldn't believe me.
This rings a bell to me. Now, it's a kind of a coincidence when you think of it. Last Thursday, I don't know if I told you, I woke up in the middle of the night, and for some reason, I had a pink tutu on. I'm a serious fuzzy feather sticking out of my ass.
Real talk. I have a real question here.
Sure.
Why did the killer take his blood? And why wasn't that ever woven into rest of the... Why isn't that... I'm like a real question here. The motives of the killer make no sense. So he stole the blood from a priest
a little months bit of ago? It, a little bit of it.
Because he's ping-ponging him around. He's ping-ponging him around. Yes,
and the priest is like, you're going to like this. This is actually pretty funny. priest's delivery of this information, they're like, how did we find your blood? And he's like, okay, you're not going to believe this, but I woke up in the middle of the night.
I did believe it. He tells that story, but they shouldn't. Wow, I do believe you, priest.
Why? But they're not curious as to, they don't even put that up as part of the killer's... Like MO.
Because if you're a serial killer, I imagine that you actually do want credit for your work.
Yes. This is not Seven. Seven, right. I get it. Zodiac, I get it. Like, this is just, this, I feel like, June, your statement earlier in the podcast that this feels as though it was done by AI is absolutely right. Because I feel like it's pulled a lot of the aesthetic choices from other things, but none of the story elements. So the story doesn't add up at all, but all of the trappings, all the tropes are there.
Because here's the thing. If you take a step back, you have a cop who has a murdered wife who was killed in a grisly way. You have people being killed in a grisly way, being a part of a game of hangman. You have a reporter who also had a run-in with a criminal where the police saved her, and she has a permanent scar. Like, these people are getting scarred because they're getting the letters written on their body. Then you have a police officer who is retired, but we don't really... He seems great. It doesn't seem like
is
he
this
was...
Is the serial killers... And forgive me, I know we're spending all of this just really trying to parse the plot.
What else can we do?
Exactly. Is the serial killer's motivation just to get back at Pacino, a.k.a. Eviction Man?
Well, by the way, that's the twist, isn't it? That I think
and
there's
as
two.
A result, Carl Urban and Brittany Snow are innocent bystanders, right?
No, because Carl Urban's wife was the first victim.
She's victim number one.
But is it because Pacino loved her? Is that because Pacino loved that woman?
I think what happened was the first person who was killed, Carl Urban's wife, was killed by that man where they go to his house and he's already killed himself. And then this guy picked up the torch.
Whoa.
Could that be part of it?
Huh?
Because Carl Urban's wife was killed. He didn't finish the job. I think that he's a copycat? I think he is, right? I thought that was part of the twist. Was that
because
I think
there is a twist, but I do agree with you that there's two killers out there.
Whoa.
There's definitely two, because there's our killer who was the little boy and is now, you know, current day serial killer.
Yes.
However, he was the one who did the V on Carl Urban's, but I believe that we might pan out in that scene, that little boy scene, to find that he has a twin.
Whoa.
Wait, when are we going to do that?
In the sequel. The sequel is when?
When? What?
Well, the sequel is happening. I mean,
that's what I'm saying, because we don't get to know there is another hangman, and he's clearly now. I think what might have happened is the sequel will be that boy was adopted by a wealthy couple and like went on to this, like has a really prestigious
job. There has to be another person. This is a nature nurture scenario.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So I guess what we're saying is this. If we were to take the plot at face value, what we saw on the screen, what we were to understand.
That's going to be hard.
If we were to take what the material on the screen and the words said dictated, Al Pacino was a part of the eviction of this young boy because his father didn't pay the rent. The father killed himself. And then the young boy was mad that Al Pacino never checked in on him. So Al,
such a crazy thing to be mad at.
I know. Yeah. And the first,
that's not worth holding on to and killing 9 people as a result.
No.
Or however many.
Well, I want to hear the rest of this, Paul, but why would a child, if a police officer expect a cop to take care of them?
And maybe, and I'll give you, maybe a 5-year-old in grief and mental duress makes a logical leap that doesn't make sense. But why as an adult, not look at the situation and be like, oh, that police officer was not the person who did this?
Here's what I'll say that maybe answers this. I think you talked earlier about Al Pacino doing a pass on the script.
Yeah.
I think Al Pacino might have toned down his character because what would make this all make sense is simply this. He goes to the boy, don't worry, I'll take care of you. He needed to promise him, you know what, I know your dad's not here, but I'll be here for you forever. You know,
I say. Is that your daddy up there? He's like a full-blown Southern, like, gentleman.
By the way, just so we know, Monroe, Georgia is where it takes place.
Oh, interesting.
Wait, okay. What?
Monroe, Georgia.
Carl Urban is from the South as well? Everybody in this movie is from the South.
Well, yeah, because it's Britney Spears' Britney Murphy. Britney Snow's hometown.
Wow. Spears, Murphy, Snow? That's your ranking of Britney's? Okay.
By the way, population of Monroe, Georgia, 15
people?
15 people.
That makes sense for why a lot of these scenes were so empty. I was like, does nobody work at the pig factory? Go ahead.
Okay, one of my favorite moments. Again, I had some laughs. Is after we're in that church and Al Pacino gets knocked over. Although, again, I had to rewind that scene because I didn't see the impact of him being knocked over. So I was like, what just happened?
Well, it's also shot so bizarrely in order to cover the stunt double.
I could not for the life of me figure out the geography of what the fuck I was watching.
Yep.
But he gets knocked over by a man who's hanging from maybe a crucifix or the ceiling. And there's a pig head on that man. And then he gets knocked over. And then later on, an autopsy is being done by our favorite medical examiner, who's just as flummoxed. The thing that I love so much is that there's the body. And then just to the side, there's a table with the pig head on it.
Yeah.
And
then Pacino's like, you know what? All these pig heads have an ID number.
I say. When I grew up in the barnyard, I knew.
Listen to me.
I'm going to also say that the FDA is not getting up in meat. That would be the USDA, right? FDA is more like packaged foods.
Again, I wouldn't be surprised if ChatGPT wrote this.
All right, but can we go back to the pig head scene? Because I don't want to skip over my favorite part, which is Al Pacino goes down. Oh, my back!
which you don't even really see.
And everyone stops. Like, they let the bad guy get away. Because in a movie it would be like, and this is the AI of it all. He'd be shot. And they'd be like, oh no, we got to put pressure on the wound. He's like, my back!
It's just a little sore.
They repeatedly are pointing a gun at the murderer and don't shoot.
multiple times.
Multiple times they have the guy in their sights and they do not shoot that person. And I just don't understand. I don't get it. Like, this feels like antithetical to what their whole job is.
Well, I think
again,
it's like, but by the way, good work on them as police officers. They're not going to just shoot first. They get the evidence. They have to figure out the evidence first, you know? But I did like when Brittany Snow went, pigs, cops.
Yeah.
Cops are pigs.
He's taunting you. Taunting you.
No shit.
Did anyone else have trouble when, okay, so there's later on.
I did.
Later on, there's a, the captain is one of our victims, and we're in her house, and we're trying to find the killer, and there's another cop who's in the house, who's left for dead in a bathtub. And we realize that our killer's walked out in the cop clothes, this was another
and rode away on a dirt bike.
Where the reason why we realized this is because Carl Urban turns around and looks over the toilet bowl and sees like a cop belt there. I looked at that. I don't know if anyone else did. I had to stare at it. I rewound it three times to figure out what am I looking like. At points, I thought I was looking down a drain or through a window. I was like, what am I? I can't see what this is.
None of the clues are clues. They were giving me things that were feeling as though, oh, this is important. But then they weren't giving me things that clearly were important. Like, again, the hangman game.
But wait,
they never sat in a conference room and said, what might this be? And how might that inform the crime spree that we are? Every 24 hours, someone is murdered. Only ever are the three of them. You would think the entire city would be shut down.
Here's the thing. I also want to bring up, just to hit this back for one more second, too. When we see evidence, people sometimes don't name it as well. Like when Brittany Snow looked at that thing that the woman had on the porch, she's like,
what was that?
Guys,
I didn't know what I was looking at. What was in the ashtray, Jason?
That? Oh, I do know what that is.
What was it?
It was the same. Okay, so that when they go to that house, it's to find Joey, the guy who was on a date with the woman who the first victim, right?
Right.
But what they realize is the woman is Joey.
Okay, yeah,
not
that.
The
but
man.
How do they
and they realize that because Brittany Snow notices in her ashtray the same dark cigarettes that were in the ashtray at the murdered woman's home.
Oh.
So that must have been there, not the guy inside.
Another moment.
Why did that woman run? She Ferris Bueller's through the town.
She Ferris Bueller's because she doesn't know the woman is dead. But it's again,
but why
this
is she running?
Because she got scared because she's
a for a drug charge.
A drug charge?
Yes.
Or abuse?
Both, maybe.
And then what my favorite thing, this might be my favorite thing in movies, again, with like the AI element, a person running, mid-run from a cop going, I didn't do anything. It's like, I get like once the cuffs are on, but to do it mid-run, like you'd be like, oh, okay, sorry. And then blah, 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 blah. That's like an improv scene. I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
You are actively running away.
Like this movie is... I'm going to say 95% to being a Naked Gun movie. Like,
agreed.
You could pivot Al Pacino into being Leslie Nielsen right now in the world with minimal effort.
Like, he's already
basically there. Al Pacino should start making Leslie Nielsen style Abrams Brothers.
Oh my
gosh.
Movies. Yes.
Instead of it being Liam Neeson, who I know it is. Should be Al Pacino,
but
which would be delightful.
Oh, him just do. I mean, we know that he can do it because of Dunkachino from the Jack and Jill movie. Like, he can do comedy.
Oh, he can do it. He would kill. And it's like, because that's where this movie is. This movie is almost a parody of a bad Al Pacino cop movie.
And there's so many things said that make no sense throughout that could be funnier jokes. Like when they're trying to find the janitor in the church, the priest says, oh, he cleans whenever he can. It's not like that would be something you would say to somebody who has a hobby. It's not like, oh yeah, he paints whenever he gets a free moment. It's like this guy like He's a janitor. He loves it. Whenever he gets a chance to clean, at 2 a.m, 4 a.m, this guy's gonna clean. I mean, he's gonna.
Well, you know, it's a church in small town Georgia, so we're packed all day. He can only clean from 2 to 6 a.m.
I mean, because
we're
get
just
in there.
So busy here at the church in Monroe, Georgia.
But whenever he can, he loves it. He loves it so much. Oh my
what
god!
What I don't understand about the serial killer is why he's choosing certain victims.
And some of them are related to our people, some of them aren't.
Some of them aren't. And Joey does end up getting murdered later on, correct? Why?
Yes. And the reason that Pacino gives is he is punishing us for saving the chief because they saved Sarah Shahi. And as a result, that means that he's got to kill someone else now. And so he kills Joey.
Their dear friend Joey. I mean, they don't know Joey.
I know, but that's so confusing. By the end of the movie, I don't understand the killer's MO at all. In a world that we live in that is so obsessed with true crime and serial killers and documenting and documentaries and podcasts about all this stuff, this is so slapdash. This is so like not compelling casework. That I'm like, why do they think we'll just go along with this? None of this is satisfying. None of this is, there's no aha moments. I'm not ahead of the movie ever. None of it.
You can't have the killer be someone who is not introduced or even spoken of. Like, again, go back to a scene and have Al Pacino be like, I made some mistakes in my career. Mm-hmm. I let things fall through the cracks. He never says that. Like, you know, at any point, like I think that we're also trying to figure out who murdered Carl Urban's wife. And when Carl Urban is confronted with the most logical explanation, this is the guy. There's a V on your wife's chest. He's like, no, it's not his MO. It's not. It's like, why wouldn't you choose to believe it? You
were an FBI agent. You were an FBI agent. Do your casework. Do your due diligence.
But this is a man who is looking for connections who refuses the connection.
Well, he isn't. He's like, he actively... Okay, so here's another possible twist. And I know I said this to you, Paul, while we were watching it. I said, Urban's the killer. And Paul was like, no! But there's something very strange to me about the way he's treating his wife's death. Because even later on when Al Pacino's like, again, trying to sort of reopen the investigation and also reopen it, it's only been a year. Why is this a cold case?
I don't know has it only been a year since his wife was killed?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it was 9 months when the killer was in jail. Yeah, it's been a year. But
by the way,
when Carl Urban's on the phone with someone, he's like, I guess I'm just trying to figure out what happened to my wife, and hangs up frustrated. So Carl Urban is clearly who's he talking to?
I don't know. But then when
why isn't Pacino that part
brings
of
it
the
back
story?
Up, he's like, oh, what do you want to put a whole team on it? You want to put a team on it? It's like, well,
what,
why not?
Which way do you want it, man? Which way do you want it? Do you want to figure this out or do you want it to go away?
His wife was killed in a ritualistic, brutal murder. It wasn't like a hit and run. Like, I think what you're led to believe in the beginning was it was like a hit and run. It was like a accident. But then when you reveal how she was killed, literally like slashed up in their home, you would be like, yeah, I think we should maybe go a little deeper on this one.
But also remember when he's talking about his wife's murder, he says, you know, Pacino asked him what happened, and he said, you know, she called me up and she said to come over that we should try and work things out. So they were like broken up or separated or whatever.
Yeah, he was too involved in his job. And
it very much seemed to me like the murder was going to be very wrapped up in Carl Urban's character and somehow related to that storyline. And it was just coincidence.
Well, seems to be.
No. I know. Here's what I think. Back to my theory of if we just take what is written. Al Pacino abandons a boy. The boy grows up. He's like, I want to take out.
Crazy to say when he didn't have any responsibility.
Well, let's just go into the idea.
I'm sorry. June, only in his powers as eviction man.
Which, by the way, I have to say, the true Latin is just eviction. It is not eviction man. The true Latin is just, but I do want any merch from the show to say Eviction Man.
Eviction Man.
Eviction Man. Just a shirt that says that
Scott
in
said
Latin.
It means Eviction Man, and I didn't know that. I thought it meant Eviction
yeah,
Man.
Yeah, Scott in the chat said it means Eviction Man, and he's smarter than us, so I believe it.
All right. He evicts this boy. The boy decides he's going to take revenge on Al Pacino by doing this game of Hangman, which, as Al Pacino says, celebrates his dad's hanging, which I don't think is the right term to celebrate. Recreates might be the better word, but celebrates the dad's hanging. And the first clue was going to be doing that to his partner's wife. And I think that the original plan was to get people all around, because the cop, the head of the police precinct, is another person that is attacked. I think it was all going to be people around Al Pacino to get maximum damage.
So the janitor was somebody. Wasn't the janitor someone that Al Pacino had also put in jail or something?
I think I'm going to just say yes to that because I don't remember it. But I will say that was the original plan. I think the original plan was to go and get people all around Al Pacino's life. But because Al Pacino has no real life anymore with any other people that he likes, they have to go to other people.
There's not a niece. There's not a cousin. There's not a... I mean, it just all felt so... Yeah.
None of it is satisfying.
Well, no, but that's the other... You just
none of it
something.
Is satisfying at all. I agree, Paul. You might very well be right, but it's not satisfying.
No.
None of these people, none of these clues clicking into place give us any of the thrills of Silence of the Lambs. Give us any of the thrills of... Because we're never in the mindset of the villain.
I totally agree. I wasn't saying that I was making sense. I was saying that I think that that's the idea.
I know.
But I will say that.
I'm so mad at you, Paul. I'm so mad at you, Paul.
But I guess it's like, but I can't figure out.
Paul, why did you write this movie?
Well, look, I got to tell you, I made a lot of money on it. here's the thing. You could make it so much more compact and better by having that priest do it. Well, David Green, I thought I put you away years ago. And he's like, well, I'm out. Now I'm a priest. Well, I don't know. I don't believe you now, and I won't believe you. Like, you could have just drawn connections so easily. Every person they encountered. This is my favorite toy shop. Go in here all the time. Love looking at manga. You know, it's like whatever.
You know what's... you're absolutely right. And what's crazy about it is the movie is so bad that it tells you immediately, the cold open of the movie is Al Pacino doing a crossword in his car. His car gets sideswiped. He pulls the van over. The guy gets out. We see the skull necklace hanging from the thing, right?
Right.
Yep.
We never return to that van, the skull necklace, again until it shows up again in Brittany Snow's apartment. And Al Pacino's like, I know who the killer is. It's a guy I pulled over a year ago from the cold open.
And
that guy has never been in the movie again.
And he wasn't chasing him. Like, that's the other thing. Like, it felt like he was chasing. Like,
no,
felt
exactly.
Like that was a
it
random
It felt like
hit
we were
run.
On the case. It felt, it was absolute random.
And I'll say one more thing about that stupid pendant that's hanging, the weird nail or whatever. That would be the equivalent of me wearing one of those scented trees around my neck because it's hanging on the rearview mirror. It wasn't like, oh, I noticed his necklace. Like, it was, he noticed it hanging from the rearview mirror. So he's like, ah.
And Pacino, this is what's crazy about it. We see it in the cold open in extreme close-up on camera shot from the interior of the car. But it insinuates that Pacino sees the skull medallion from 30 feet outside the car. He's outside the car completely.
And
he doesn't see that thing. We do.
And why would it make a difference? Why would you even clock that as a cop? It's like it's hanging from the rearview mirror.
He must have remembered it from... I thought maybe it was on his dad when he was hanging.
I believe that they shot that
open. He remembers
that
later.
They shot
he remembers that
open.
Oh, he does? Oh. It was on his dad?
He does. It was on his dad.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Okay.
But again, this is where Pacino's bad at his job. He doesn't remember that until even later when he remembers the father hanging. He first remembers the medallion hanging, the skull hanging from the rearview mirror. He doesn't put it together that it was also hanging on the hanging father until the next clue dump. That's the thing is, exposition and clues are given to them, they don't solve anything. They don't have any satisfying work done for them. The guy, the killer, walks them through it every step of the way. So they're only realizing things the killer wants them to. They're bad policemen.
I will say I disagree with you because the best clue is this one.
Stiff dead guy hanging in here. Don't you think?
Yeah, I agree, yes.
Now, if his body was wet, would that make him freeze faster?
Oh, yes, of course it would.
Archer, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking when I want my beer to chill faster, I'll wrap it in a wet paper towel.
He was already wet before he was brought in.
There you go. I think this boy wants us to sweep the river.
I was like, he does?
I didn't get that at all.
What
does that mean? I don't even understand the paper towel to the dredging the lake. I didn't understand it.
I don't.
And
know.
That, and you think that's the you think that's what he wants? He wants you to realize they're making connections that seem fantastical, and they're not making connections that seem quite obvious.
And then the final murder also leads to like a live Twitch stream of this murder.
My favorite,
so it's like
part of that Twitch stream. Wow, Paul, but there's so many comments of people just saying this is fake.
They were getting good numbers too.
I mean, though, look, it definitely inspired me to do some fun stuff like that on my Twitch channel. But now I am very interested. I mean, that was the other thing. It's like it builds to a climax that's so out of character, right? Nothing has been televised, nothing has been orchestrated, and all of a sudden Brittany Snow's on camera and he's like, I'm gonna do it. Why? What? Why? Why? Why now? Why here? Why?
Just because there's
why the technology?
Here? I don't know.
Listen, if I swear to God, if Bosch had shown up at the first murder scene, nobody else would have been murdered. Bosch would have figured this out immediately with good police work, solid clue gathering, and tracking it down. These guys are out of their minds.
Yeah, the fact that they don't try to solve it, it's like the movie is called Hangman. And again, as someone who won at Celebrity Wheel of Fortune, $160,000, like you're asking us as an audience to play the game with you. And for those of us who are very good at playing that game, it's very hard to not be able to compete. I was frantically writing down the letters that I could see passing by to try to...
I kept freeze framing every time we got a new letter and it was plugged in. I kept freeze framing to be like, okay, I guess let me see if I can figure this out. Let me see if I can get ahead of it because they must be digging in on it now. They've got three or four letters. Nope. No interest.
No, the only thing that they came up with was the most insane thing, which is like, pull the records of everyone released in the last 9 months.
Yeah.
That would be a crazy thing to do.
But they don't. Here's what's crazy. They don't even seem, not until Brittany Snow really mentions it and foregrounds it a lot, they don't seem to think it has anything to do with the two of them. Even though the movie began with their badge numbers being carved into desks. That's just it, man.
With
they're
two
bad
little
at
dummies
this.
Staring at a hangman puzzle.
Yes. What was
and
that?
Then,
this feels like the snowman. What it feels like. Remember when we found out that movie, The Snowman, one of the reasons that it felt so bad and disjointed is because they didn't shoot 20% of the script. They ran out of money and time,
exactly,
and they were unable to shoot it all. That's what this felt like. They didn't have the shots.
They had the scenes, and this is maybe where the Al Pacino sleepwalking through it might come into play. They had the scenes that would set up a lot of connections. They did it. They just didn't add those lines in.
I will say, the cold open scene where he chases the van down and points his gun and get out of the van, it does appear that his eyes are closed the entire time.
He does look, that's where he's the sleepiest.
He appears to be full REM sleep that moment.
When he gets out of that car, he looks exhausted.
He's like, hooah, I say, you come out of that van, hooah.
And by the way, who's afraid of this man? Like, this is a short little guy who's like 80 years old. Like, God bless him. But it's like,
and
no one's
like, there might be a bomb in there. Why they think there's a bomb in there, who knows? But he's like, fuck a bomb.
And we never find out. What's crazy.
Al Pacino's 83. He's 80 years old running around.
We never find out what that guy, why that guy sideswiped him, why he was driving so crazy, why he was in the van, what was in the van, what he went. We never find out anything about that guy. So why put the scene at the top of the movie?
Medallion.
Just so that later we can, just for the
medallion.
June, it's just for the medallion.
And look.
It makes no sense.
And I got to just say one thing that we haven't talked about, but you know me, I love slaughterhouses. I think it's a beautiful place where, you know, we really are creating, we're ending life.
Your first date was to a slaughterhouse,
and
right?
June,
wasn't
and
it,
and,
you guys?
Yeah, you know, and I always like to bring there because I'm like, it's the end of life, it's the beginning of life because we're creating nourishment. Here's the thing. That slaughterhouse was treated as if, like, 5 o'clock, the bell rang, and they just left all the meat out on the counters. Like, there is meat every, like, meat is not put away in the middle of the night.
It's the middle of the night, and do you know how many rats there would be swarming
in
every place?
I mean, that meat was not clean. And they don't turn on a light. Clearly, there's a lot of lights at the slaughterhouse. Clearly.
There's no guards. There's no security people. There's nobody letting them in. They walk in the back door of a slaughterhouse. There's meat, just meat remnants all over all the tables.
All the tables. So it's like you're walking through a haunted house. That's how, like, yeah.
And
yeah.
One of them should be like, oh, we got to call the health department to have this place shut down because this looks absolutely not up to code.
And these motherfuckers, these guys are so unfazed. That woman slices her wrists. And the captain's like, what did you do bringing a Coke can in there? He's like, all right, look, you're screwed up. Well, yeah, somebody just tried. like
she's
you should be a
dead.
Little bit more. She's almost
dead. Yeah, he's
dead.
Like, all right, I made a mistake.
Well, yeah, you got to crucify me about this?
Once again, it's Brittany Snow who's like, detectives. She's the only person who has any semblance of situational awareness in the world.
Yes, and they are so out of it.
They are oblivious. They don't, even when there are things that are right in front of their face, they do not connect them at all. And she does every step of
the
way. She's a genius.
I was confused by her, though, because I was like, they do something sometimes with women, especially blonde women in movies, where they're like, okay, let's put a bun on her. Let's put a low bun on her. We gotta believe she's smart. Put a bun on her. And that low bun
put
was starting
bun
to
her.
Drive me. Put a bun on her. Get her in a bun.
Put her,
and get her out
put
there.
A bun
put
her
in a bun.
Put her in a bra. Put a bun on her. Bun in a bra.
And it's driving me nuts. But there were times where the two of Pacino and Urban would be talking and they'd cut to Brittany Snow and she'd be in tears listening and emotionally connecting to them and what they were saying on a level that felt so outsized. I'm like, what's her relationship? Paul, you said this at one point, like, are we going to find out she's Pacino's child?
Yeah.
Why is she so connected to them?
Yes. Why are any of them connected to each other such that they feel so, like, you would think that she and Carl Urban might start having a romance in a movie like this. Like, maybe they start to care for each
not
other.
Not with that low bun.
Nope, not,
that's
zero,
why they kept
zero.
Her in a
There's
bun.
No, they, no, that's the thing is, there isn't chemistry between any performers, period. Like, there isn't, I don't believe that Carl Urban and Al Pacino have known each other for so long. Is that they're trying to impress upon us that they're old, dear friends. That doesn't seem like it, you know? I don't get their interior relationships that would warrant the emotional investment that you're describing.
It doesn't make sense because her backstory is that when she was covering the cartel, someone jumped her and the cop who
saved her life was killed.
Saved her life, I don't think. But the cop who tried to find the person who did that and scarred her, he did get killed in the line of duty. So I'm like, okay. But what I had trouble with is for somebody who's a New York Times investigative journalist, I'm like, she keeps on saying this isn't about me. And I'm like, honey, you are making this about you. You have revealed that you are not impartial, that you are very much so looking for a story where you can kind of heal this trauma and make a cop, memorialize a cop in some way. And it's very strange.
So that's a larger question that I have. Is she on assignment in Monroe, Georgia, doing a character profile of Carl Urban, ex-FBI agent who now works for Monroe County PD for the New York Times?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Why go to Monroe?
What story is this?
We needed to bring something back. Like, there's so many things that are left hanging in this, and not just the tulips that he pulled from the garden, which, by the way, all the men out there, if you're going to go into your own garden and get flowers to bring to your wife, like, that's the worst plan of all time. Like, to go into your own, like
again,
it shows no
thought.
That's why
I found it very strange, and I think we might learn something in the sequel, because I don't believe he cared about that wife.
The only way to make this movie better would be for the sequel to be all of these same events told from the point of view of the serial killer, so that I can make sense of the movie I just watched, so that it's just giving me the information, because I don't have any of it. Like, or give me a Brittany Snow movie, because she's the only person that I'm interested in continuing on and solving cases, because she did all the work for this one.
This is what we're talking about. This movie doesn't have a main character. This movie has no, like, literally every character is about one quarter developed, and we still have one quarter that is not full by anybody.
Well, that's, yes, all three of them together are one character.
Right.
She has emotions. Carl Urban is turned off. You know, she, like,
and this is
like,
why I feel like this is the movie where it's like a checklist. Like, okay, we need one star that has foreign appeal. Well, Brittany Snow, she's in Pitch Perfect. We need one legend. Okay, Al Pacino, we got it. We need one person who's a good up and comer. Okay, Carl Urban, right around that. Like that, like, yeah. It's like, put them together. We need to be cop, and they all have to be good guys. Like, it's like, it feels like they were thrust, like they were all.
And
thrust.
we need a hook.
Yeah.
What about Hangman? The game Hangman.
Done.
What?
Everyone's talking about Barbie right now. No one talking about Hangman. This is the first kind of, you know, kids toy to movie transition.
The Hangmaniverse? you know, like, but that's the thing is, like, the Hangman doesn't make sense. The reporter angle doesn't make sense. The police procedural doesn't make sense. It's a failure at every single level, because the minute you start to pull any of it apart, it falls apart
and
completely.
And the other trouble, and I know you brought this up already, Paul, but it is really troubling to me that Al Pacino forces Carl Urban to look at those photos of his wife. Cause I could see a scene in which he's just like, hey, so I just want to let you know that, we actually realized that, your wife, Jessica, had a V carved into her. What we saw was actually a V.
Yeah.
And he could say, let me see it.
Like, and he'd be like, you know what? Actually,
no, and he could be like, don't.
There's no need. We saw it. And then,
meanwhile, he keeps it in the top part of his desk as if he's looking at a picture of his kids. Like, I mean, that he's looking at that a lot.
Wouldn't you, if you're Carl Urban, be looking for any way possible to connect the cold case of your wife's murder to any current ongoing investigation? Wouldn't that give you hope? He seems to not want to investigate.
Well, maybe he doesn't want to close the case because he wants to keep his wife alive.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't. I wish I understood this fucking movie. Wow. Because I like you. I love Carl Urban. I think
Judge
Dredd, the Dredd movie that he's in is fantastic.
The Boys.
The Boys, he's just exceptional in. I love him.
Oh, I love him so much.
Can we just talk about one moment, though, too, that no one reacts to? Carl Urban loses his shit and is about to run over the killer, right? Who speeds away on a dirt bike. And everyone's like, stop, stop, stop. And they get hit by a Mack truck. And no one's like, hey, man, you've lost it. It's like, shit just went on. Same thing. Next day.
Yeah.
Like, no one reacts like they literally say to Brittany Murphy, you need to take a break.
Yeah. You need to sit out. All three of them would also be hospitalized for a week after that accident, at least. Pacino, if they were hit by a Mack truck in that car, the way they were hit, Pacino would turn to dust.
You're so right. Because
he would explode.
We've already seen that when Pacino is like, basically like, tapped by that hanging pig man, he falls on the ground and can't get up his back.
After they're pulling Brittany Murphy, not Brittany, Brittany Snow, you got it in my head, Paul. After they're pulling Brittany Snow out of the car, they should look over and where Al Pacino was sitting should be a small pile of dust. and like and a hair piece. Like, because it makes no sense that he walks out like, oh, hey, that was a crazy one. Hoo-ah. Y'all want to get some po' boys? Ha-hoo.
It's just 33 minutes to Atlanta. The deep
I got a
south.
Crawdad in my pickup truck. Hoo-ah, gators.
I'm just, and I do think that this is a movie that you fall asleep to and you think is better than it is. Like, if you catch it midway through, you think it's better than it is because you clearly like, oh, I missed something that sets up and all this makes sense.
Yeah, you're
like,
totally
but when you sit
right.
and watch it, when you watch entirety. The whole thing, you see all the holes. But that's like,
to watch if there are deleted scenes from this movie. I would love to see what they chose to take out. You know,
fascinating. Like, so I,
if anything, I also believe they had to put everything they shot in the movie. They're like, wait, listen, we gotta put it in. This is a blooper, but we're putting it in.
I was obsessed with the fact that Brittany Snow in the beginning of the movie, when they realize when they're at that school and see two dummies, two little doll dummies staring up at the hangman board, and clearly, like, we come to realize, like, oh, this is the serial killer telling Urban and Pacino that they're dummies and they're dummies for trying to play this game. But when she says, I'm good with numbers, because she's remembered his, first of all, like, just remembering a number doesn't mean you're good with numbers necessarily, but also
you're also a reporter. You're a reporter.
Yeah.
Know this stuff.
But also what I was counting on is, oh, you're good with like puzzles and games and like, we're
right.
Like
you'd be good on Survivor.
The puzzle portion of Survivor?
What? Yeah, the puzzle portion of Survivor.
Okay, yeah, they do compete with.
What I will back up what you're saying, June, and say, okay, let's say Brittany Snow is good with numbers and has a good memory, right? Because she's a reporter
let's
or whatever.
See it again.
And then Pacino is not only good with puzzles, he does the crossword puzzle every day, he's good with crossword puzzles in Latin.
Right.
Which, again, the clue is Latin. And it is a crossword puzzle-esque style. But Pacino, his character, not interested in solving
they
the puzzle, Pat.
They never look at those
not
letters.
Not interested
they
in solving
never
the puzzle.
They never say, like, oh, okay, do we have all the vowels yet? They're never looking at that word. They're never, nope. You know, they tell one of their assistants in the police station to, like, narrow the search to who's just been released. It's also like, well, narrow the search with those letters that we
just have one person working on it and say, don't sit on that medical examiner all the time who, yeah, they've been hung. Like, what else do you need to know? Like, at this point, we don't need to keep on going back.
Yeah.
Like, why was he frozen? Why was he frozen? Who cares? At this point, the ins and outs of the murders are not important because we're chasing someone who has an MO.
Let's look to 11 p.m., okay?
Yeah.
And try to solve this freaking puzzle.
By
Why
then,
couldn't they call off the train?
It took decades to crack the Zodiac Killer's cipher. People worked hard to try and crack the cipher that the Zodiac Killer wrote.
In
the
movie,
you don't have to tell
Zodiac.
June twice.
Yeah,
they're not
she was there.
Interested in solving the hangman.
Her husband
puzzle.
Solved the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, I know all of it.
It
took them 60 takes to decipher the Zodiac Killer's cipher.
Oh my God. I will say that this is I think almost if you watch the first 45 minutes, you'll leave happier because the first 45 minutes,
yeah.
It's fun, it's crazy. But when you are forced to look at the end and you yourself feel like you want to go murder someone and make a hangman puzzle, because my big question is also this. It ends on this bullshit cliffhanger of like, there's another hangman, which I'm going to go to your theory, June, that there are twins. But who was the first letter killed?
Carl Urban's wife.
Oh.
What do you mean?
No. The second puzzle. The second
is there
hangman.
A letter filled in?
Yeah,
one
letter
notice.
Filled
oh.
in.
Oh, so we just haven't found the victim yet?
Well, I guess there's been somebody killed already.
Yeah.
The only way this movie could redeem itself would be if in the second movie it's revealed that Brittany Snow is the murderer. Or Carl Urban, or I guess Pacino, but there's no way. Just because if nobody that we're inside, if nobody on the inside of this movie is part of the crime, it's deeply unsatisfying.
It's so terrible. You know? And it's also like, this whole idea also that the murderer needs to strike by 11 p.m. I'm like, why?
To celebrate
because
his
that's
dad's
when his dad
death.
Yeah, that's when his dad died.
And that's when he evicted him, I guess, at 11 p.m.
That's when the eviction
that's
man
a stretch,
came.
You guys. So
can I
eviction man?
May I ask one other question, which I guess this maybe unravel everything. Why was it in Latin?
Great, great question. Why was it in Latin?
Why was
it makes no sense. Like, and why do you... Okay, so now let's reverse engineer it. So they clearly thought, oh, let's make it in Latin so it's harder to solve the puzzle as we're going.
But meanwhile...
So it'll be in Latin.
But
how are we going to solve it? Okay, we're going to have a scene where it's established that Pacino can solve puzzles in Latin, so he's very familiar with Latin. So we'll just put it in earlier.
But okay, but here's the thing too. It's in Latin. Let me tell you how it's spelled. E-V-I-C-T-I-O-N. E-M. The word is there. It's not like one of those Latin words where it's like, oh, that means to evict. It's there. Evictionem. It's there. It's not like yeah. I figured it out. Even the Latin word, you know, maybe the Latin word for abandon.
If you flip the last two letters, it's evict me.
Oh.
Here's my question, though, which is when that hangman's written on the wall with the eyes already in, so the word's complete, right? Mm-hmm. So did the killer do that on his fall down? How did those eyes get up there when?
Well, exactly. I think he knew it was, he was going to be successful in killing Brittany Snow. So he does it, but he figures out the puzzle before. Like he doesn't kill and then do the puzzle because he did that at the train station too. He may come around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, do the puzzle part, then go back to the train yard and then hang up the guy. Like he's got to like, you know, it's a complicated thing.
It's like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
And I mean, he's doing so much work, but like, we're never even along for the ride with him. You know, like in Silence of the Lambs, when you see Buffalo Bill talking the girl into helping load the sofa into the van, blah, blah, blah. You're with Buffalo Bill while he's out and doing his scary ass stuff. You're like, okay, I understand the world of the bad guy. In a way that I don't understand the world of this bad guy, even when it's revealed to me by the end. I don't, and his reasoning, forgive me, Mr. Bad Guy, Mr. Hangman, but his reasoning is nonsense. He thinks Al Pacino's responsible for his
it's
father's
just
hanging.
It's so unsatisfying.
Well, the dad was upset. Okay, so no, it's not that because the landlord went to court to evict the tenant. Then the eviction notice was probably put on the door. And then the father's like, well, I'm going to kill myself. And then knock, knock, knock. And then Al Pacino arrives. It's like, there's multiple steps. It wasn't like Al Pacino's like, hey, I got to evict you. And the dad was like, 1 second, I got to take a quick shower. And then killed himself. It seemed like the kid was maybe home alone with this man hanging as Al Pacino's working the night shift.
Why are we doing nighttime evictions? I thought we were going to find out that the young boy had actually hung his father.
Ooh.
Great. By the way, give me that. Give me anything that helps set up for me what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the movie, at the end of Burn After Reading, there's that great scene with J.K. Simmons and David Rashi where they're trying to explain the events of the movie. And they're just like, honestly, I don't know. It makes no sense. This happened and then this happened. He's like, really? That's crazy. Yeah, no, I know. It doesn't make any sense. Like they break it down on a level that is like the events of this movie were preposterous. So I don't know what to tell you. Like the movie should have had one of those because none of it added up. And they should have just been like, this was a weird one, right?
Yep. This one was, have the hangman just go, I had a plan, but I had to work fast because when you came out of retirement, I just had to kill people willy-nilly. Like just make somebody say something that makes, when she started following you around, I knew that she was the smartest one. So I had to make my tracks even harder to cover. Like, what?
And basically the whole thing comes down to like Pacino having to like apologize to the serial killer and be like, I failed you. because when I was like a beat cop, I didn't like adopt you. Like, I don't understand.
Because I followed like, the letter of the law?
This serial killer, I'll be honest with you, is like his emotional, like he's attached too much emotional weight onto Pacino. It's inappropriate.
It's absolutely inappropriate. And
he's saying to Pacino, all of my personal trauma is because of you.
Wait, not Pacino didn't my work guy. Pacino didn't even work in that place where he was abused that we think he was abused. I don't even know. He's like, let me take your place. He wants to take the place. Yeah. Why? Why does he have the guilt? Like, again, make him the dad. Make him like the, like he was having a relationship with that kid's mother and he abandoned
something, anything.
Make it personal is what this movie is lacking, because there's a lot of personal stuff. Carl Urban's wife is killed. The you know, all these, there are relationships, but they're all circumstantial. The direct, the criminal, the serial killer and Pacino, there is nothing really personal between
them. No, this movie is a lot of people bummer. Meeting each other for the first time.
Yes.
For the coincidence. Very first time.
Yeah. And that's what I can't, that's what's so tremendously unsatisfying about it. And why I would not recommend people watch it.
Oh my gosh. This is a lot. It's a lot that we went through here. I feel like we had an emotional reaction to it. I was coming in enjoying it. Now I'm really frustrated. Makes me want to just kill somebody and send them run around town to solve a hangman
puzzle.
Stop
that, Paul. I actually did enjoy watching this
June
movie.
And I would be on the case.
We would be on the case. I really did enjoy watching this movie, actually. And it is so deeply unsatisfying. And there's no there. And it's, again, not anything that I saw or anything that happened. But I did still have some really good laughs. So, I just did, you know. And as far as our movies go, I thought this went down pretty easy.
Oh, yeah.
It's an hour and a half.
Nice.
It's fine.
Nice time.
And especially if you're not expecting. I think because of the people involved and the type of movie it was, I thought it was going to be a little bit better.
Sure.
Like, in terms of story. If this had had even a more slightly cohesive storyline, it would have been a blast, sure. I think. But it wasn't enough, just because I was doing so much work on the movie's behalf that I was like, why am I working so hard if the movie's not going to work this hard?
I went away feeling stupid about myself. Like, maybe I missed something. But clearly, we might have all missed something, because there are people out there that love this movie. It is now time for Second Opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? I need a second opinion.
All right, here are some reviews from Amazon. The average rating of this movie is 4 out of 5 stars.
Wow.
57% are 5-star reviews. MD Windhorst writes, looking at some of the reviews by, quote, expert reviewers, I just call mine just an opinion. It's a cop movie, people. You are probably the same critics that think you know everything about the hops and your freaking local craft beer.
Whoa.
If you enjoy watching a legend school younger actors that hope to one day achieve half of what Pacino has and help them hone their craft, then you should watch it. Was anyone great in this film? Was the plot weak? It's a freaking cop movie, people. Pacino should have stopped and could have stopped long ago, but he loves his craft. Can he call it in and still be better than most of today's herd? Yes. For a cop, quote, movie, it was extraordinarily well acted. Was it interesting enough? Yes. Was it worth an hour and a half of my time? Yes. Did it shove down my throat some social warrior message? No! There aren't many movies left that are purely entertainment and escape. And this did the trick for me. That's just my opinion. 5 stars.
Oh, God.
Wow. Oh,
and God. And then wow. This one was, I like this one. The title was, Al Pacino is great. Paul Urban is a good actor as well. 5 stars. Paul Urban.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And then...
I mean, I don't even think you can level the claim that this is copaganda simply because they're so bad at police work.
I mean, my gosh. By the way, I would say the... Oh, my God. Anyway, Deborah Gale writes this. I don't understand the 3-star average. I do probably watch too many serial killer documentaries, series, and movies, and I have no idea why I'm so interested in it, but I am. This is now one of my top 10 on my list for the best movies about serial killers. It was exciting. It got my pulse racing, and I was nearly white-knuckling it. The body count was high, and the pace was fast, and all the actors did a great job, even though most of the movie was filmed at a night setting, and I never once thought about it because you could clearly see what was happening at all times. If this is the kind of subject matter that interests you, you will be really glad to spend an hour and 33 minutes to watch this film. It's like the movie Seven. I'll also be watching that movie again, too. 5 stars.
I mean, this is not anything like Seven. This movie wishes it was
this
Seven.
This is Seven through, like...
I feel like they want... Like, the pig head scene was what made me feel like, oh, these guys think they're doing Seven.
Oh, my gosh. If boy, oh, boy. So... I mean, I know we've talked about what we recommended. I think we're kind of mixed on it. There's enough in here that's
kind of
fun. Yeah,
I think watch it.
Watch it fine. But, you know, don't, it's, boy, what a mess.
I will say there's one connection to How Did This Get Made Past, which is the director of this movie, Johnny Martin, was the stunt coordinator for Old Dogs.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and... Just drawing connections, that's all. And,
I love it.
And in the beginning of the episode, I said, I got caught up in saying, this is Al Pacino's lowest rated vehicle, under 40%. I thought I misread something, but during the podcast, I did do the research. No, this is Al Pacino's lowest rated starring vehicle with 4%.
Oh.
When I saw the 4, I was like, oh, a 0 wasn't added. 40% is what I assumed. But no, it is now verified. 4%. So this is a low one. It's rare to see the Rotten Tomatoes scores in the single digit.
The guy who is revealed to be the serial killer at the end is simply not smart enough or capable of pulling off all of the kills in the movie.
No way, no how.
He's simply not, I don't believe for an instant that this moron has been 3 steps ahead of these 2 police officers and this New York Times investigative journalist.
Well, I think we're going to find in the sequel that he has not been.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, I guess you're right, because it was so dumb.
I think
go ahead.
I think we should be giving up hope that there's going to be a sequel on this one.
What?
How do we get, can we help this? I mean, because of the strike?
Yeah.
You think because of the strike? Do you think they were in the middle of writing it and it was pencils down?
I mean, maybe they were trying to find the right Latin word and it's taking them too long and they've just given up. What would be the best Latin word with a V? We've already backed ourselves into the V. What if it was just evictionum again? All right. Before we end today's show, I just want to give a shout out to Francis Rizzo, who has sent so many amazing themes to us over the years. And Francis is unfortunately in end-stage kidney failure, and he is doing everything he can to try to find a match for a kidney transplant. So the more potential donors he can reach, the greater chance he has. And if there are any potential donors out there right now, you can go to kidneyregistry.org or call 516-562-0550 or email transplantsurgery@northwell.edu and mention the name Francis Rizzo.
Yeah. Best of luck, Francis.
Yes. Good luck, Francis. And thank you for all your songs.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our episode. Make sure you always head on over to TeePublic. I'm sure that we will have some sort of Eviction Man merch. I feel like we're going to need a shirt. And a shout out to our producer, Avril Halley, for finding these movies. This is a true gem. And our producers in-house, Scott Sonny and Molly Reynolds. Of course, all of our amazing art is designed by the fantastic Kyle Waldron. And today's episode was engineered by Rich Garcia. And make sure you listen to next week where you can chime in about all the things that we might have missed or maybe theories that you might have about this movie. You can give us a call at 619-PAUL-ASK and we will talk all about whatever you want to talk about. You can leave questions for me and Jason, and we can also get into more theories of
The Hangman.
All right, see you next time, everybody. Bye for now.